stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
these and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Thursday night or Friday morning or Friday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. Coming to you from Sydney, Australia here, and being Thursday night, you know, that means Mr. Billy Shears. So coming up very shortly, we have part three of Steve Winwood, Nine Lives. And this has been good fun so far. I dig Mr. Stevie Winwood. Very talented guy. And a little later, we're going to do a little bit of musical comedy. And it's just a very, very funny bit. But we'll do that a little bit later. And got a few things to wrap up for the week. A story that both ELO and Gene sent me about the USDA killing the budget for studying pesticide use, which has pretty horrible consequences when you actually start thinking about it. And we'll talk about that and a couple of other things. Got a bit of a biofuel article for you. But while Bob and I were doing the horn section, came across this. I thought this was quite funny. Our new Prime Minister, Mr. Kevin Rudd, has a relative in the news. And I think this is really, really funny. Van Tan Rudd, who's an activist artist, lives in Melbourne, submitted a painting for next month's Ho Chi Minh City exhibition. And they've rejected his artwork because it's considered too controversial. Now, this is the our Mandarin-speaking prime minister who has kind of wowed the Chinese with the fact that he speaks their language, has a nephew who... And the piece of artwork is rather interesting. It's a painting of Ronald McDonald carrying the Olympic torch, running past a burning monk. Very, 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 very interesting. You can find this at the City Morning Herald, or no, The Age. So TheAge, .com.au, and it's in the top 10 articles of the day. I like the piece of artwork. not surprised that it was pulled. Not happy about it, but just watch for some of the right wing wackos to come out and say, "See, we told you he was a leftist." But I do have a feeling that Kevin Rudd would support this young nephew of his, saying, you know, it's his art. He can do what he wants. So, but boo on the local council for saying that it was too much. But, hey, the piece of art's getting a whole lot of media attention outside of the exhibit than it would have had otherwise. Isn't it funny how that happens when you decide to censor things? They tend to get more exposure than if you just shut your trap and let it happen. Just a thought. But anyway, let's move into the Thursday night regular. Mr. Billy Shears, which, of course, you can hear Night Sounds every Saturday night here on the Head On Radio Network from 9 to midnight Eastern time here on the Horn. But we love Billy for that and these little segments that he does for this program. So part three of Steve Winwood, Nine Lives. Roll it, Bob.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hi, this is Steve Winwood. More from the new album, Nine Lives.
When Eric Clapton left Blind Faith to go with Delaney and Bonnie, he was concerned that Steve Winwood must have felt betrayed and angry. That's what he put in his recently published autobiography. But no, says Steve.
Oh, well, no, not at all. And I hope he knows that. But, you know, I too have read Eric's book, and there are a number of things I've actually found out since I've read his book and have spoke to him about this, saying that, you know, I had no idea until I read in your book that you felt like that about that. But getting back to Blind Faith and the breakup of Blind Faith, I think, to be fair, neither Eric nor I really knew quite where we either wanted to go or where we were going. I mean, I think the Blind Faith album we made was probably more representative of the direction we wanted to take that band in. But then I think when it came to playing live, there were pressures on all of us. And so, judging by what Eric said in his book, he probably wasn't sure of where he was going or wanted to go. And so it was really an abandonment of the collaboration, although it's very thoughtful of Eric to say that he felt that he was abandoning me. But I think, in a way, it was a natural progression that it did disband.
Eric Clapton explains why the recent reunion with Steve Winwood could not be called Blind Faith.
Well, that would be impossible. It's like saying, you know, here's a Beach Boys reunion when the only brother left is Brian. You can't do it, you know. I don't think you can have a reunion unless everybody's there. I mean, Ginger and Steve and me are there, but Rick Gretsch passed away a long time ago. I wouldn't do it without him. But don't get me wrong, I mean, there's always going to be an opportunity and a desire to work with Ginger and Steve.
Come down off your throne and leave your body alone.
Find My Way Home from Steve Winwood, Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker, and Rick Gretsch, also known as Blind Faith in 1969. After Blind Faith imploded, Steve set out to do a solo album. He was going to call it Mad Shadows, but things went awry, and it developed into the much-loved Traffic album, John Barleycorn Must Die. Steve explains when things went wrong with the Mad Shadows project.
Guy Stevens was the producer that I started to do the solo album with him. After about the second cut, I think, I was going to cut Great Balls of Fire. The producer wanted me to cut that. It was a great idea, which it didn't really work out too well. So then the whole project floundered for a while, and then I thought, well, the obvious thing is to make it a Traffic album. So anyway, we just got together and made it. And I think that John Barleycorn was a great album, too. I think it really was. Of course, it was in the wake of Blind Faith, too, so I guess certain things had been building up during the live era of Blind Faith. So, you know, I just had all these things I wanted to try and do. But there again, I think a lot of it was done in the studio. I mean, just like right now, I mean, we just got a lot of it together. We might have a basic idea, but we just go and work things out in the studio. Just to jam, just having fun playing. Like a hurricane around your heart, when earth and sky are torn apart, he comes having hope to be here, while hoping that the path of this leads you, leads you.
Freedom Rider from Traffic's John Barleycorn Must Die. The band would release one more album, then quietly disband in 1975. Steve released his first solo album in 1977, aptly called Steve Winwood. In 1986, his career hit the stratosphere with his fourth album, Back in the Highlight. Turns out part of the arrangement of the album's first big hit, Higher Love, was an accident.
I recorded in New York, which is in contrast to the last two albums I did, which were done in the country completely alone. I didn't use any musicians or anybody. And on this album, I used some great musicians, some great singers, great engineer, worked with a co-producer, and altogether it was a completely different approach to making the record. Plus the fact of being recorded in New York instead of in the middle of the wilds of mountains in England. I mean, there are lots of, should we say, accidents that happen on records. I think a lot more than you might expect. It happens when you're just in there and you're messing around with tapes and you say, well, that might be nice if that's the front, and someone says, no, 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 no. And then someone else says, well, you might as well just try it, just see if it does. You know, so you try it, and you go, yeah, well, that works. And so you keep it in. I think, really, the only thing that's important is how the end result sounds, not how it's done.
Time to play our last song from Steve Winwood's Nine Lives, available now. The next to last song on the album is an especially poignant one titled At Times We Do Forget, written by the songwriting team of Steve Winwood, Josiah Netto, and Peter Godwin. The music of the tune reflects the lyrical theme that we're all citizens of one world.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, that's why I feel that the collaboration with Peter and Jose works so well, because not only do Jose and I seem to work off each other with different styles. You know, I come from English rock background, and Jose comes from a, you know, Brazilian background. But I love Brazilian music and want to move towards that. He loves English rock or Hendrix or Zeppelin and wants to move closer to that. So there is this constant kind of pulling between each of us. And then Peter comes along and can somehow make it all have sense. And so now I feel we've got a great writing relationship. Well, the world's the perfect place. We're only doing
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
And thank you, Billy Shears. Thank you very much. Steve Winwood, something else. Great organ on the stuff that seems to be on that record. That B3 that we've had so much fun talking about recently. And I see, you know, you just... Sometimes it's like conjuring people. I do see that we have David from Maine on the line. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
Good evening, John.
How are you, mate?
I'm all right. I haven't listened to your show in the last three or so days.
Yeah.
Because my internet has been... wow, I'm getting some serious feedback like last time.
Oh, yeah?
Crazy. Yeah. Hmm.
Huh.
It sounds
bizarre.
Like that dying moose thing again.
Huh. I don't get it on this end. And Bob,
you know what
saying,
it could be?
You...
It might be have to do with something with the delay of a cordless phone or something. I don't know.
Could be.
It's Radio Shack, so.
that could very well be it. But yeah, obviously rang in not to tell me about that, but to tell me about something else. What is it?
Yeah, I was going to tell you about this thing that I caught, this story about a vertical garden that there's some guy decided to make in Arizona. And it's a pretty ingenious idea. What he decided to do was use rainwater gutters.
Right.
And what's amazing about it, though, was he built it so... he built it so the water would go right back up again, and you wouldn't need to. There would be no. It was like a complete cycle. So the rainwater would take care of everything.
There's a few things out there like this. There's actually a couple of high-rise projects. One, I believe, there's one in Dubai, and there's a couple of others around the world where, you know, actually utilizing. Commercial building space, sides of buildings and things, to actually grow not just like grass and things, but actually, you know, fruit and vegetables and things like that. And the idea is there's huge benefits in reducing heating and cooling costs within the building, use of, you know, gray water, if, you know, cooling down ambient temperature in the city. There's a few projects like this going on around, and some of them are fairly large.
Well, I guess a high school student did it for his sci-fi fair, so.
Right on. So this is a high school project.
Yeah, and I guess he used, to collect the water and to have it drip, he used cotton swabs.
Oh, right.
He really thought it up, and a lot of people are getting excited about it. So I'll send you a link to that, and you can maybe post it on your blog or something. I think it's really amazing.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out, because, I mean, of similar projects that I've seen, you know, talked about, they've been really, really large things. This sounds like it's something, you know, slightly more human-sized, and there are real benefits to... You know, working, living, you know, material into your actual living structure, as far as, you know, things like energy and whatnot, and, you know, because of the energy used and the lack of, you know, trees and things in most cities, the ambient temperature of the cities is higher than elsewhere, which ends up increasing energy usage and costs and everything yet again. So, I think we're going to see more of this kind of stuff, over the next few years, I would hope.
I hope so, too. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, I was going to talk about music or anything like that, but I think this is important, and we did touch about a little bit on it in the chat room. It's about fundraising. And,
right.
I'm about to make a post on there. Probably you guys will see it tomorrow about how we can arrange and coordinate proper fundraising and have conference meetings every week so we can get the ideas flowing.
Yeah,
and I think that will benefit us.
Yeah, I've actually been doing some work on setting up some infrastructure for actually managing some longer term projects and things for the network. Kind of going along the lines of, you know, the way open source, you know, projects will be developed in all different places. Having, you know, a central track where people have tasks and, you know, you try and reach milestones and things like that to get us a little bit more focused. And, you know, because we all have limited energy to expend on any of this at the moment until we actually, you know, have it making, you know, giving some of us a bit of a paycheck.
Right.
That, you know, trying to make it take up as little time, you know, just trying to really manage time. I think is probably really important. So I'm curious to see what you found. ELO and I were also looking into video conferencing possibilities, which we still were looking into. But I'm curious to see what you have, because there's definitely a concerted effort, and I appreciate your input in on this for trying to develop this thing that we've created. It's like we've got it now.
Right.
Now we need to continue to get it out to a wider audience, and also tighten up our own act as we go as well. So yeah, I'm definitely into that. And I think getting more of our long-term community involved, because I mean the energy's out there, I think would be silly of us not to get people involved.
Right, that's what I'm saying, and also it's also what it has to do with is the real-time interaction. You're not limited to two or three voices in a chat room. If like 10 people decide to show up, or six or seven or whatever, it's those ideas at the moment that are going to spur other ideas and maybe generate something that you never thought before, and that's the seed for something that you could never get unless you were there at that moment.
Yeah. So, definitely, I'm interested to see what you've found, and I think we'll very shortly have a little bit better infrastructure in place to make these tasks one a bit easier and just more effective. There's a little bit of, you know, I need to give up the reins on certain things a little bit because I just can't do everything that I'd like to do. I need three of me and 72-hour days, you know.
I understand that.
And I mean, right. You know, Bob stuck to the production chair for bloody 12 hours a day. You know, you can't exactly even think about asking him to throw any more effort in, you know, at the moment. But yeah, we need to get the collaboration stuff happening, and I think we're going to see that, you know, before long.
You know, I was thinking probably the best way to do this, and my friend has been harping on me for, weeks now. You got to get Skype. You got to get Skype. So I was thinking, you know, probably the best way to do this is a Skype conference, if everyone has it. If most people have it. If some people don't have it, that's okay. We could still find a way for them to get in the chat and interact with us just through text or whatever. But I think that kind of networking ability will pay off in the long run regarding fundraising ideas and strategies when you're in a real-time situation like that.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think we have no choice but to go there and just kind of, you know, how
and
life
really,
goes.
And then, you know, the cool thing is what we could do is we could someone could have Business Plan Pro, and at the time that we're talking like that, we could have somebody volunteering or whatever. It could be every week someone could use the Business Plan Pro to add to it, but we could be adding our